Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and the subject we are going to be talking about today may, for some of you, well, you might relate to it, say, wow, this is really awesome. Others of you may say, yeah, you got to be kidding. This can't be for real. This sounds like a Star Trek special. The reality is all of us view life through the paradigms of experience that we have gone through. And my guest today, Dr. K. Paul Stoller, is a man that has had some experiences that I know many of you will say I can relate to. And the book, My Life After Life, is written by him, but it isn't written by him. Aha! Does that got you going? Well, I hope so. I want to welcome to the show Dr. Stoller. Thank you for being my guest today.
Thank you for having me.
Now, I want people to know that you're not associated with woo-woo land in any way, shape, or form. You are a physician that started as a pediatrician, and you were a diplomat of the American Board of Pediatrics for over two decades. And then in the 70s, you were a University of California President's undergraduate fellow in the health sciences. You worked in UCLA Department of Anesthesiology and volunteered also, interestingly enough, at the parapsychology lab at the UCLA Neuropsychiatric Institute.
That would be where the woo-woo comes in.
No, okay. Well, okay. We'll throw in a little woo-woo just for the heck of it. But that was research. That is something that certain intelligent people said, we know certain things can be, so we want to research it. Now, you have written all kinds of papers. You have been involved with humane animal treatment, and then you, in the 90s, began to investigate hyperbaric medicine, and we're not going to go into that too much at this point, and you have become a fellow of the American College of Hyperbaric Medicine and served as the president of International Hyperbaric Medical Association for close to 10 years. But this book... Now, I'm giving the information about you because most people that are of the intellectual level and educational level that you have achieved, who has served in so many different ways, highly respected, the last thing in the world they would expect you to write a book about, anybody that would be in that environment, is about your son, who, when he was killed in 2007, 2 years after that, he communicates with you. And that's what this book is all about, is that communication, because he wanted you to write this book. Tell us what happened to your son.
Well, first of all, he started actually communicating with me within 2 weeks from his passing. And Galen was 16 years old, and... his mom lives in a very rural part of New Mexico, and there are train tracks that hardly ever get used near the house, and they're on private property, so there were no flashing lights or guard rails at mm-hmm. this crossing. And I don't even know if he ever saw a train go on these tracks, but he was crossing the tracks when an Amtrak train came through, and so that's how he left. He wasn't on drugs or committing suicide or anything like that, but that was the circumstance or the happenstance of what happened. And I'm the medical director of three clinics covering California and New Mexico, and I could not afford, in terms of all my patient responsibilities, of taking a lot of time off. And so I was already heading to California from New Mexico to service my clinics there when I got contacted by Susie Ward, who has a website about her son who was killed in an automobile accident when he was 17, but way back in 1980. And she told me that I had the same agreement with Galen that she has with her son, and she actually had a message for me from her son. And this is all detailed in the book from Galen's mm-hmm. point of view, not from my point of view.
Right.
But the next morning, and this would be, you know, he passed on December 1st, 2007. The next morning, which was December 12th, 2007, I woke up to this very heart-wrenching dream that was a collage of fond memories, and in the background was playing the Robert Goulet song from Camelot, "If Ever I Would Leave You," you know that one.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I'll spare your audience singing anymore.
Okay.
When I immediately woke up, and it was just emotionally wrenching, but within a few minutes, I realized, well, wait a minute, Galen wanted to be an actor. He had just come back from New York where he saw 9 Broadway plays. This was his thing. He wanted to be on stage. And I said to myself, I think that was from him. I think mm-hmm. he put that together for me. And fast forward 20 days later, and that's when I got my first verbal communication from Galen. 5 o'clock in the morning, because it woke me up, obviously, so I checked what time it was. And it was not something I would have ever said to myself. And it was just a single line: "What age would you have preferred that I died?" And I was both ecstatic and stunned at the same time. But my joy only lasted for about 15 minutes. I fell back to sleep and then had the first wave of what I call a grief storm. I actually had to process probably years and years of grief in a very, very short period of time, because you cannot communicate if you are compromised by grief. And so, if you want to call it magic or a curse, because it was extremely painful and difficult to move through, I had to process a great deal of grief in a very short period of time. And it was in that process that I actually discovered that the hormone oxytocin, the hormone that people might recognize, that's the hormone of brotherly love and friendship and trust, it's used to treat women who are having problems with lactation,
mm-hmm.
as it helps with milk letdown. So it's available at the pharmacy and compounding pharmacies, of course. But I discovered that oxytocin actually helped what I was going through, which I consider to be pathological grief. The grief became so intense, because you would think, oh, I just had communication from my son. He's making contact with me. He's sending Broadway, because when he sent me that line, "What age would you have preferred that I died?" he actually sent another Broadway tune with that song. So I knew, if there was any doubt in my mind, I would know it was from him.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to remember which tune it was. He was supposed to play Fagin and Oliver in just 4 to 6 weeks in the future at that point. Obviously, he couldn't. So the tune that came through was the one that Fagin sings, "I am reviewing mm-hmm. the situation." You know, the one from the end of the musical.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Anyway, so that is where I discovered the usefulness of oxytocin. And I have a website where I talk about this, and it's called griefsos.com, because I'm very interested in getting the word out there about how useful oxytocin can be to someone experiencing pathological grief, and it doesn't stop you from processing your grief. But what I'm calling pathological grief is something where you cannot disengage from the intensely negative, obsessive thoughts to the point where it starts interfering with your ability to function during the day.
Oh, yes. It's massive. It can develop into a manic depression type of a patterning.
And so what the oxytocin does is it breaks up the obsessiveness. It blocks anxiety, fear, and panic emotions into the amygdala of the brain. So if you really want to obsess about something, it won't stop you. But the minute you give up the effort of obsessing,
mm-hmm.
that obsessive thought will fall away. And when you're in the midst of pathological grief, that obsessive thought will not fall away. It has a life of its own. And
this gives wonderful information to people that are listening, because it is going to happen, and everyone's different in the way that grief is processed. I mean, I've known some people that grief has taken them 12 years to work through something. Other people, it's a shorter period of time. We are all very unique in the way that we respond, and circumstances have a lot to do with it. Relationships have a lot to do with, you know, the response. And you and your son were very, very close. Now, you wrote for what, 2 years? You had all kinds of information. You called them your training sessions. What were those?
Right. Well, as soon as it's clearly established that I was being contacted by Galen, I started journaling hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pages of journaling. And about 2 years after Galen passed, he asked me how the book was coming along. That was his sort of rhetorical way of introducing the concept that he wanted me to write his book. And I said, book? I said, the journal I have created is a tome that no one will ever read, and would require, you know, a Herculean effort to edit before it would ever become a book. He says, I don't care about your book. I'm talking about my book. And, of course, I hadn't written anything about his book. But that was mm-hmm. his sort of joking with me to say, I want you to start taking down my book. I want you to put together my book. And so just over a year ago, I started writing the chapters down of his book, and at the end of each chapter, I have an editor's note where I say what I want to say, and give my, you know, a slant on things. And that has become the first book in what he calls the Death Walker series. And I have continued to work on the series, but the first book is actually coming out this week. It can be ordered online, and it's by the end of the week it should be in an electronic edition as also, and it's called My Life After Life.
Yeah, let's talk about some things here, because for those that are listening, if they have never had a loved one communicate with them, which I have, this is not in the depths that you have had, but I mean, people coming to me, giving me specific information, certain things. My father was one, and it was 3 years after he died, and he wanted me to take care of something, and I ended up taking care of it because the people that were in the position of responsibility didn't do what they were supposed to do. He comes to me, tells me via a dream, and then I get the things done, and everything's in order. It's really sometimes hard for people if they've not had a visitation, as some people would call it, a communication going on. They say, oh, no, someone's dead, they're just dead. But I can tell you, I've talked to thousands and thousands of people through the years, and they have more stories to tell than we could shake a stick at. It's just amazing. And yours is particularly fascinating to me. Not only is it well-written, but you do write it from the position of Galen, and it's as if he wants people to understand that when they die, there's another dimensionality. But he goes into quite a bit of detail about this. And it's not long and drawn out. He's pretty concise. And there was just a lot of information. And at one point in your book, towards the beginning of it, you talk about a transmedium whose name is Audrey Wrinkles.
Right.
And you said that she was a wonderful asset for you, and this especially was relating to your father. But with Galen, you had such a bond with him, such a tremendous, tremendous bond. And you did have this deep thing with grief relative to him, and his perspective, it's almost like this is part of his gift. This is part of what his death was to represent, as a gift of understanding to the people that are willing to read the story. Am I correct?
Yes. I mean, he wants to be a teacher, and he would have been a teacher if had he remained on Earth, although it would have taken him 3 or 4 decades to get to the point where he could have shared his knowledge. It's just that the knowledge he wants to share is not something that can wait 3 or 4 decades.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, so the take-home message, the first take-home message is, yes, there is a continuum of consciousness after we leave the physical body. So that's probably the number one take-home message from the book.
Now, he was quite a reader. He is very articulate. And when he's describing his experience on the other side, he comes to realize how important the mind is. And he has some interesting teachers. He has a dog named Andy. There's Matthew. And there's so many other people. Now, there was a mother, Matthew's mother, in fact, that contacted you and gave you a message. What was that all about?
Well, I was so devastated by his passing that I literally, the message that came through from Matthew was like a life preserver to a drowning man. And so Matthew, normally, at that point, Galen would not have seen anybody. He was adjusting rather slowly to his new dimensional home because he died so suddenly. Sometimes when you die suddenly, it takes a little more of an adjustment than
mm-hmm.
when you've, let's say, been ill for many, many years, and death is a known quantity in your life. But when you're 16, you don't expect to die. Galen was expected, but still, it was a sudden event. And so it takes a little kind of adjustment period. And he was going through that adjustment period where he was just sort of walking with this dog named Andy, who had been a search and rescue dog on Earth and who befriended Galen. And he was just walking on a deserted beach, because, as I said, he was in a period where he really just wasn't seeing anybody. He was adjusting. And Matthew came down the beach and said, "I'm here to deliver a message on behalf of your father. Do you have anything you want to say to him?"
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how that exchange took place. And first, Galen didn't know. Galen said, I don't know who you are." And Matthew says, "But I know who you are." And then Galen, you know, immediately called in his teacher, which you can do, and say, "Who is this man?" And that's where the teacher explained that this was Matthew Ward, and through a connection with his mother and me, that this was being allowed for my benefit, not for Galen's benefit, but for my benefit. And then Galen knew immediately who this was, because sometimes I would read Galen the messages from Matthew that Susie Ward would post on the internet, you know, and Galen would always roll his eyes. But now he was actually seeing Matthew in person. So that's how that exchange took place.
You have here some very interesting statements by him, but I want to jump forward to the chapter on the Hall of Cups. This really intrigued me. Tell us what Galen describes in this Hall of Cups, and what is that representation for? What is the Silver Cup?
Well, everyone, I think, has heard of the Akashic Records. This is the depository of all the activities your soul has engaged or is engaging in. But on Galen's particular dimensional station, it's called the Hall of Cups. And there's a silver cord that we are connected to our higher self with, or our soul, whatever you want to call it. And this silver cord turns into a cup when we cross over to the other side, and this cup holds our experiences. And so there's actually a hall or a library of these cups, a vast collection of cups that go on and on to infinity almost. And this is the experiences of these souls and kind of manifested in a physical manifestation, metaphorical, symbolic manifestation as a cup. And you get issued a cup when you cross over. At least that was Galen's experience, because everyone's experience is a little different. So he was just reporting this is what his experience was.
The Akashic Records, I'm sure many of my listeners have heard of. I think it is fascinating, the various modalities of thinking. And when you think of Galen and him being a young man born in America, having certain environments that he was a part of, he really, as you said, wanted to be a teacher, very much so. But you've got a chapter called Hitchhiker to the Universe, and there's the great I that he talks about in giving information out. In trying to find portals, he became aware of varying dimensions, also that telepathy was something that could be done, and he had a lot of opportunity to exhibit his own choice of how he wanted his environment to be in this altered dimension. And he goes through a number of lessons that he's sharing in this book that I think are extremely intriguing. And one of his statements is that there's no good Captain Kirk and evil Captain Kirk. There may be a matter Kirk and an antimatter Kirk, for everything has a counterpart to keep the energy in motion in the grand cosmic spiral. And there was so much as a teenager that he did not have a comprehension of, which isn't a surprise. I'd say that happens with every teenager. But his communication about what he was experiencing and his maturation process was really quite surprising. And I have known different individuals who, when they've lost a child, when they are trying to contact them, they sometimes are surprised to find that the contact is made with a mature child. And it's not a baby. It's not the little one they remember. Maybe the child was like 8 or 5 or 6 years old, or 8 or something like this, or 16 like your son. And then they become aware of the fact that the person that's communicating with them actually has grown and matured. Sometimes they're shown the young child, and so that they have a point of identification, and then that child will show itself as an adult. It's really quite a fascinating process. Now, when you were going through this, when you were having these experiences, did you sit yourself down at the computer and just allow yourself to be the channel, if you will, for it? Were these through dreams, the different experiences that you had? Were you sitting in your car and all of a sudden start to have stuff coming through your head? How did he reach you? In what In what level and in what manner did he?
It was almost always in dream, but I used the trance medium that you referred to earlier, Audrey Rinkles, as a sounding board, and her guides linked up with Galen. And so, for example, when I'm reading the chapter back, I'm reading it through the trance medium's guides to Galen. So there was an interesting triangulation that took place and confirmation of the information I was getting in the dream state.
Well, Galen has a companion called Wormy. That's how I pronounce him.
It's just Worm. W-Y-R-M-E, but it's just pronounced Worm.
It's just pronounced Worm, not Wormy. Okay, and you have so many different points of information in your book, and Galen is very clear in his communication, and he talks about the classes that he has been in. Now, this is going to be a series of books. He wanted to call it the Death Warrior series.
Death Walker.
Death Walker series. That is quite interesting, and this book is really quite easy to go through and read, but it's very, very thought-provoking because someone that may have an interest in quantum physics could read it and would go, whoa, this really could make sense. There's a lot here in a very compact book titled Life After Life. And before we went on the air, you said you are working on not book number two, but book number three.
Right. Book number two is already at the editor's, and I'm working on book number three at this point. So that obviously Galen is not the Death Walker, I came to find out, but I'm being trained to be the Death Walker. So that's why he wanted to call it the Death Walker series.
You talk about being trained, and I find that this is the experience of many individuals because we are breaking away from paradigms that would say this is not something that is possible. But I think of great authors like Taylor Caldwell and others that often said that when they would write, it was as if they really weren't doing the writing. Somebody else was dictating to them, and they would put it together. And I've found many people that have become very well known as writers having the same statement. It's quite a fascinating phenomena. Now, your website is My Life After Life, but when someone would type it in, it's my-life-after-life.com. Also, for those of you listening, if you want more information about oxytocin, which is a component that can assist with grief, you can go to griefsos.com. So you have two wonderful websites there, my-life-after-life and griefsos.com. Dr. Stoller, this has been a delight having you as a guest. What thought would you like to leave my audience with today before we close?
Well, I think Galen's second take-home message would be to let people know that they're not stuck, that no one is stuck having to accept where they are, what they're doing, if they don't think it's in their best interest, that they have other choices available to them, and they can start taking the steps to make those choices now. They don't have to wait to cross over for a quote-unquote better life or to be in heaven. You can start moving in that direction right now.
Well, Dr. Stoller, I think that's very well said. Your book, My Life After Life, a posthumous memoir, and it's coming out. It's right here, fresh off the press, and I think you will find Galen's expression of his experiences being given to his dad a fascinating read. And again, thank you very much, Dr. Stoller, for being with us. This is Donna Sebo. We are going to be taking a break. We'll have more good things to share with you. Check out this book, My Life After Life. It is, if you ever want to find another book that this, to me, is very reminiscent of, but even though it's very independent of it, it was written years ago. It was written by a Bishop Pike. and the name all of a sudden just slipped right out of my head. But try Life After Life. I think you'll find a fascinating read. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Telephone lines are open. 888-815-9756 is the number to call. 888-815-9756, and all I need from you is your first name or your initial. And then, of course, after that, just sit back, relax, let me tell you what I perceive, and then you can ask me a question about anything that is of significance to you. For those of you in the New York area, I'm going to be flying back there next week. So if any of you listening would like to schedule a private appointment with me, all you have to do is call my office, and the number is 800-872-8852 or 253-582-5604. I'll have a couple of days where I will be available for appointments, and then I will be going to Alaska in May. So for those of you that are listening from the far north, I'll be up in your part of the world in the month of May. And all the details regarding the dates, etc., are in my newsletter. Go to my website, DelphiInternational.com, and you'll find all of the information that you need right there. There's also a calendar that tells you where I'm going to be and what I'm going to be doing. And I want to thank the many people who have sent me responses about my newsletter. I got a very gracious email from a person that said, your newsletter is just filled with so much wonderful, empowering information, and I really loved the letter from the person in Japan. There was a listener that sent me a copy of a letter from a Japanese family, and they know this person personally, and I decided I was going to use that as part of my editorial, and it's just a fabulous letter. So if you didn't get the newsletter and you'd like to read it, then just go into my website, DelphiInternational.com, and you'll find more details there. Okay, let me let you know who's coming up tomorrow. We're going to be talking with Filippo Francini, Magic and Grace. Oh, his CD is phenomenal. This music is absolutely awesome. It makes a wonderful, wonderful CD to play if you wanted to do meditation of type. The tonalities, the beauty of composition is just fabulous. So he's going to be on with us tomorrow. Also, on Thursday, we're going to be talking about The Courage Companion, Living Your Life with True Power. Mary Beth Sammons is going to be my guest, and then we're going to be talking about the green stuff, money, 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 Moneylicious, or Neela Gross is going to be my guest on Friday, so we're going to be talking about a subject matter that I think everybody is interested in. So we're going to be getting some basics and I think some real good details. So that's the lineup for the rest of the week. Be sure to tell your friends. And, of course, remember, you can always find out about the guests coming up on the Donna Sebo Show by going to where I'm listed, tap on the little indicator that says show information, and you can read through about all of the individuals that are going to be on the show with me. Again, give me a call if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. Well, I wanted to share something with you. It's called the Anti-Kythera Mechanism. And this is something that was found in 1902. Now, I've had guests on through the years on my show that are interested in archaeology, ancient archaeology, and the finds that have been made around the world are just fascinating. And we like to think that we are so superior with our technological development, but sometimes I think we don't realize that there have been other sophisticated environments that have been on this planet before. Well, on May 17th in 1902, archaeologist Spyridon Stice began his examination of some artifacts that were seriously corroded that had been recovered from a shipwreck off the coast of Antikythera. And this is Greece. And when they were looking for this ship, there were two divers. They actually weren't looking for the ship itself. Let me correct myself. They were not actually looking for the ship. They were diving for sponges. And they found the hull of this old, old Roman ship. Now, not only did they find the hull, but the discovery was made that this ship was loaded with statues. And some of them were marble, some of them were bronze, and they were all heavily encrusted with minerals. And he started, you know, taking that mineral, what do I want to say? It's really, really tough stuff to deal with. It's a very laborious process because you never know exactly what you're going to find out and find underneath that severely encrusted items or that you might have in your hands. Well, what he found was that there were three main parts and dozens of fragments. And the more he cleaned, the more he discovered outlines of wheel cogs. Now, the device itself was 13 by 6.7 by 3.5 inches. Now, this had been housed in a wooden frame, and there were three main dials on the outside of it. The mechanism itself was marked with over 2,000 characters. 2,000 characters. One of the dials was marked with divisions for the Egyptian calendar, and there was an inner dial that was marked with Greek signs of the zodiac. Talk about something that would really be amazing to discover. It's all there. The dials he found, once they were totally cleaned up, could be adjusted to compensate for leap years. And he said this device originated in the first century B.C. Now, in 1958, remember that was 1902 when this discovery was made. In 1958, there was a Derek de Sola Prince, and he was fascinated with the history of various scientific instruments. And he was visiting the Athens Museum, and he saw this mechanism that Mr. Stice had discovered was on display. He couldn't believe the efficiency of the miniaturization and the complex gearing system that operated perfectly. And it was 13 years later, after he saw this in the museum, that X-ray photography was developed where they could actually see the entire interior mechanism, and they discovered that there were 30 to 70 meshing gears, which had teeth that were formed of equilateral triangles. Now, if you've ever looked at an old watch and you see all of these tiny, tiny, tiny pieces, You'd say, well, that's what they did in the 1800s, 1900s. Well, the first century BC, they were that sophisticated? Mm-hmm. Absolutely. He said the mechanism was a basic analog computer containing technology that would not appear until clockworks in the 1700s. Now, they were still, remember, the wreck was discovered in 1902. Now, it was visited for the last time, apparently, in 1978, but they weren't able to find any more remnants of this mechanism. And they said, this device is extraordinary, the only thing of its kind. It's absolutely beautiful. The astronomy is exactly right. And when you understand the mechanics of how it operates, you're just amazed. Whoever did this did it exceptionally well. So sometimes we like to think we're the first. I wonder. Just a little bit of information on some scientific mechanisms that I think you might find fascinating to learn about. It's wonderful to be able to have different people discover different things, I feel. And it sort of shakes us up when we think we know it all or we're so advanced. Perhaps. Sometimes I think we need to learn how to advance in our thinking. You're going to hear some guests in the coming weeks that are going to have some very strong opinions about various things that need to be done to make our world a better place. And I think you're going to find it really interesting. So I hope you'll check out my guest list and tune in. Don't forget, you can always call me, too. I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, 888-815-9756. One person can make a difference. You don't have to be mature to do it, as far as age goes, but you have to be mature enough to see value and to say, I want to do something. Well, there's a young man by the name of Jacob Rice. He's 15 years old. He lives in Florida. He decided about 4 years ago that he wanted to do something. He wanted to make a difference in people's lives. He had heard about another young boy that decided he wanted to give away backpacks. Well, Jacob said, I want to do something too. So he just started asking questions. As it turned out, he happened to talk to someone from a local social service agency, and they said that what they needed more than anything else was kids' shoes. Well, he decided that was going to be his project. It just really rang his chimes, and that's what he wanted to do. So he decided he was going to make a statement about what he wanted to do, and there was a back-to-school night, and he said, I'm going to find out how many kids need shoes. Well, at that back-to-school night, 72 kids signed up saying that they wanted shoes. Well, what he did, he started visiting shoe stores. He found a store that would provide him with shoes at a real, real inexpensive price. Then he took it to the next step. He found some private donors. He found a foundation that would help him. And 8 months later, this young man, Jacob Rice, was able to deliver to every one of those 72 kids a pair of shoes. Now, he has decided he wanted to do a nonprofit charity. It's called the Shoe Giver of Tampa. It works with Souls for Souls of Nashville, and that's S-O-L-E-S for S-O-U-L-S of Nashville, Tennessee. And this group collects and distributes shoes worldwide. And I have a photo of him sitting in the middle of just hundreds of shoes. And every few months, this is what this young man does. He measures lots of kids' feet and sends the sizes to the Souls for Souls founder, Wayne Elsie, who finds the shoes and has them delivered to him And then this young man, 15 years old, distributes them to the youngsters that need them. To date, he's handed over more than 1,300 pairs of shoes, not only in East Tampa, but also in the Dominican Republic and Liberia. Do you know he has a goal? He wants to be able to fit 10,000 kids with shoes. He said, it's my way of helping my community. And he said, I felt an obligation to do it, and I'm doing it. Donna Sebo here. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And if you want to chat with me, 888-815-9756. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you would like to chat at 888-815-9756. I don't know about you, but I love ladybugs. I just think they are the most fascinating little insects. Of course, they're great in your garden. You want to have them, especially if you have roses or you have any plants that will get aphids. They just absolutely love to eat those little critters. That is just what they like to wine and dine with. But they are really very special, and I know among many different groups of people, they say, ooh, when you see a ladybug, that means good luck. Well, Aliyah Hill wrote a little poem about a ladybug, and I've got a photo of this in front of me, and there's this beautiful, beautiful pink flower, gobs and gobs of petals, and here's this ladybug that's delicately balancing on one of the flower's petals. And this is how Aliyah Hill's poem reads. She said, I saw a ladybug crawling along the garden wall, whispering to every bud and bloom, wake up! Spring has come to call. And boy, it spring is strutting her stuff up here in the Pacific Northwest. We've got the cherry blossom trees that are just absolutely gorgeous. There are trees that are of the magnolia family. I call them tulip trees because they have these magnificent, magnificent blooms that fill your hand if you were to take them off the tree, and they look just like tulips when they open up. And it's something so spectacular to watch as this tree begins to put its blooms out. And, of course, we're getting all kinds of storms coming through the Pacific Northwest. One minute you got hail, the next minute you've got this black sky, and all of a sudden blue shines through. And you go, woo-hoo, this is really great. Well, we're known for our daffodils up here in Lacana, Washington. This is the time of the year when you make sure you have your rain gear because you never know when you're going to get blessed with the liquid gold here in the Pacific Northwest, and Laconer is a community that is absolutely awesome. If ever you have a chance to visit this magnificent state, you need to go to Laconer, Washington during this time of the year, because you will literally have millions and millions of daffodils, and you come into this Flower Valley. They have tours, do all kinds of things, but this Flower Valley is gold, yellows of all different hues that are just out there, millions and millions of them. And then shortly after the daffodils come out, then you have the tulips, and then you have these awesome, awesome acres of brilliant reds. You have purples, you have yellows, you have all the colors of tulips that you could ever imagine. And maybe you can't get to Holland, but if you can come to Laconer, Washington, you definitely will feel like that's where you are, because it's just amazing. People come actually from all over the world to visit these phenomenal fields. They are just absolutely incredible. And I have a wonderful story about daffodils, but I thought I would just share that with you another day. And I wanted, you know, so many of us, we're really having to watch our budget. Have you noticed how the prices are going up on the food and various things? I got an email from someone that said, wow, inflation is really going to hit, and food is going to be so very, very expensive. Well, many, many times when you go through difficult periods where maybe you've lost a job or you're having a real tough time and you have to manage your budget, we go in for foods that are really high carb. We'll go in for something, let's say, like a lasagna or potatoes. But you know, there's many ways that you can fix things where you're still going to get your protein and you're going to get the nutrition that you need, and you can really do some shopping around, and you can save money in so many different ways. And one of the tips that I have used through the years, as I know many of my friends do, if you like to shop at the big box warehouses, maybe you want to buy meat or you want to buy flour, you know, you're getting a whole bunch of something, divvy it up. Talk with a neighbor or a friend and say, gee whiz, I really need this. Could you use it too? Could we split the cost on this? And it helps everybody out, because when you're able to buy in volume, that works really, really well. Also, if you enjoy fresh fruit and you know of places like your farmers markets in your local areas, then you can find out when you can get your buys. And that's the time then, if you have certain fruits and vegetables, maybe have what I call a canning party. I used to know a woman that every year, starting in the spring, depending on the fruit and or vegetable that was going to be coming out, she would get together with family and friends, and it actually became an annual event. And so everybody would pool together their mason glass jars, and they would check on all the resources that they would need. And when certain fruits came out, certain vegetables came out, they basically had an assembly line process. And all of these men and women together would work, get things canned up, and then they divvied it all up afterwards. It was a great way to socialize. They got the kids involved, and they said it was an efficient way of being able to feed everyone. And this is something that is so very, very important. Many times in communities, if you have a food bank, you will go and you'll donate things, and a lot of food banks will only take canned items, things that can have a shelf life so they can keep it available. And so many food banks at this time do not have enough in their warehouses to take care of the needs of many, many families that are going through difficult times right now. So if you have some friends and you love to cook and you've got a fabulous family recipe, if you did something where everybody got involved and it saved time, labor, made it into a social event, then maybe you could give some of that to your local food bank as well. And it's a lot of fun just collecting and sharing recipes and getting an agreement and going ahead and doing it, because canning is a lot of work. I know, I've done it. But I'll tell you what, when you make preserves, when you do things like that, they just taste absolutely awesome. And it's a great way to get through the winter when you may not be able to go out and to let's say, pay the prices for some of the things that you would consider, if you're going through difficult times, a luxury item. But if you're able to work together with a group of people, have the team, my goodness, you're going to have a real good success rate. Well, I do think that we're going to have to say goodbye. My goodness, the hour has just gone by like the wind. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is your day. This is your life. Live it with joy and zest. And remember, the best is right here, right now, and even more is to come. So keep a smile on your face. Share good thoughts with other people, and trust. Believe me, you'll be a richer person for it all. This is Donna Sebo. We'll talk to you tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.